Welcome to Modern Figures Podcast, hosted by Dr. Jeremy Wasom
and Dr. Kyla McMullen, where we are elevating the voices of Black women in computing to inspire the next generation of the advanced technology workforce.
This podcast exists to highlight the stories of Black women in computing, to inspire high schoolers and the young at heart, and to dispel the myths and preconceptions about Black women in computing.
Hi, everybody. Today we have an extremely special guest with us here. We have Dr. Gloria Washington, and her hometown is Kansas City, Missouri, where she hails from. She is currently an associate professor of computer science at Howard University. She's received her bachelor's in computer science from Lincoln University and her master's and PhD in computer science from the George Washington University. She was also an intelligence community postdoctoral research fellow at Clemson University in the College of Computing. That's where I met Dr. Gloria. And currently, she runs the Effective Biometrics Lab and performs research on effective computing, computer science education, and biometrics. She's currently leading research that explores the role of affect and emotion and imposter syndrome on performance in computer science courses. Additionally, she's exploring the link between technology, mental health, and Black women's hair texture. Finally, she also works closely with clinicians within the Howard University Hospital to develop technologies for improving the lives of children and teenagers with sickle cell disease through the creation of tools for keeping track of their plan and encouraging them in moments of depression. The ABL is currently funded by the National Science Foundation, the National Security Agency, Northrop Grumman, Dell, and Microsoft. So she is where the money reside, where the money reside. So her other claims to fame, she has also worked at Booz Allen as well as MITRE, and she's been a visiting research scientist, faculty in residence at Google. So welcome, Dr. Gloria.
Thank you so much for having me here today. So just fancy. Thank you.
Yeah,
we've been trying to have you on the podcast for a while now.
I know.
It's been like 3 years, I think.
It's not been three. Well, probably three. It probably has, actually.
Yes.
But we can blame the pepperoni for this.
The pepperoni. Yes. Got it. check. Oh my goodness.
We can definitely blame the pepperoni. So, Gloria, you had like an interesting transition where you did your formal education and then you went to industry and now you're faculty. And we want to get to, you know, how you went through that trajectory. But early on, did little Gloria in Kansas City think that she would be here? You know, did anything in your life influence you to go in this direction?
Honestly, so I went to a small HBCU, Lincoln University in Jefferson City. And one of the things that I always had a person who would tell me, oh, you know, you should really be a professor. So I always knew I was going to get my PhD. I just didn't know in the specialization. And I didn't think that maybe I would have the outreach that I have, like I have at Howard right now. So I saw it, but it was really fuzzy.
Okay. So when you were young, was like science and math, were those things that you really liked?
So I will say I like fixing stuff. And like, so I am the youngest. I have two older brothers. And one of the things that they love playing games and stuff like that. And I love fixing stuff with them and helping them, like, you know, figure out how to overcome something in gaming. So I had always thought that I would do something like that, but I didn't know what kind and what and how I wanted to make my impact. Hmm.
Did you grow up in Kansas City?
I did. I grew up in Kansas City, born and raised, and I had always envisioned myself like staying there, becoming a professor, and like, I don't know, maybe getting people who, you know, look like me or whatever and getting them in the field. But yeah, I loved Kansas City. But then, you know, when you grow up and you go outside of Kansas City, you realize, oh my Lord, like what was I thinking? And I saw all these Black people in DC and I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Who were like doing the daggone thing. And I was like, I'm going to do the daggone thing. And I want people to see me like that. Yeah. So yes.
That is funny. Did you do any like programs? I know you said you like fixing things and helping your brothers. Like, did you have any like camps or programs?
I did, like, in high school, I did basic. I'm that old. I did basic. I did Pascal. And, like, I created, I remember the first program I did, I created a program that did the music for Irene Cara. Do y'all know who that is? Mm-mm. I'm so old. Okay, it was Flashdance. It was Flashdance, and I loved it. So when I got it to work and it actually sounded like what I was trying to program it to do, I was like, oh, okay, I can actually do this. And so I had to, you know, really explore that.
You were interested in computing really early then.
I was, yeah. I just didn't see how I can make an impact, but I was like, okay, there's some kind of way I can just like finagle in here and make a game or something.
So it all it started from the games. By the way,
yeah, you are not old. I learned basic, I think like in eighth grade or something. And we had a female computer science teacher. Like, I was like, how in the world? I'm just reflecting back on that. Like, she taught us. I'm like, oh, you put the number and what it needs to do. You could just keep adding instructions. It's amazing.
I was so proud of myself. Like, oh, it actually sounded like the record and everything. So, yeah.
Aww.
So you kind of knew that, like, you were going to go to college for computer science somewhere. Did you apply a bunch of places, or did you just decide, you know what, Lincoln?
So no, actually, so weird trajectory. I feel like I've been starting and stopping so many times. So I actually went to Tuskegee, and I knew that I wanted to go to an HBCU, and I wanted to go far away. like I love Kansas City,
and also not here.
Yes, yes. And like Kansas City has Black people, but not those kind of Black people. It like Kansas City, love it, but you know, it didn't have the kind that I really saw myself as. So I wanted to go far away, and I went to Tuskegee. Worked out great, was there, but then my mother got sick. So I just wanted to be closer. And so basically I moved back and went to Lincoln because it was the cheapest option. And at that time, I knew that I would have to make some financial decisions as it relates to that. So that's how I ended up going through Lincoln. I actually got done in 3 years because I wanted to hurry up and graduate. Yeah. So it was, you know, an interesting story. Yeah.
That's really cool. Man, that is serious. You did a whole computer science degree in 3 years. Like, it's people that struggle just with the four, the normal four, or take five.
Yeah, I think a lot of people take five.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. So during that time, my mother ended up dying when I was like, I would say right when I entered Lincoln. So it was like at that time, I was like, okay, let me hurry up, get in my career so I could take care of myself. Because I was thinking like, you know, Black people, we don't have insurance. And she didn't have insurance. I remember I inherited a house.
Whoa.
I inherited, and I think I might have told Kyla this in, you know, before, but I inherited a house because I'm a junior, Gloria Washington Jr. Mm-hmm. So like all of those kind of bills, and me and my brothers were trying to figure out at that moment, like, well, what do we do as Black people? So I thought, okay, you got to pivot. So that was my pivot.
So did it allow you to...
And you're doing all that.
Did it allow you to, like, bring in enough income to support everybody, or...?
No. So, actually, we ended up losing the house, and my brother sold it for, like, bare minimum right before they foreclosed it. And then at that time, I was like, Gloria, you're a really young person. You really should... you know, get your degree. Do not let this get in the way of that, because that's what my mother always said to me. She always was like, oh, I know that you're going to get your PhD. And unfortunately, what she would do would fill out all these applications for me. And then I would find out about it. And so this is so funny. But right before she died, like, she submitted an application for me to the CIA, the National Physical Science Consortium. I had an interview and I tweaked it. I tweaked her application. I did, you know, so I just let her go out like that. But like, I ended up getting it and it paid for everything. So, yeah.
That's wow. That's incredible. Like, that's, I need a moment because I've already had a full day of cognitive load. But I mean, I just lost my father this year or recently, and I can't imagine being like a teenager, right? A teenager and having to figure that out. Like, that's really, really hard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like, it made me, you're supposed to be stronger and stuff like that. But then I guess I was always, and this is maybe a bad thing, but focused on money and like, okay, am I going to make enough so that I could take care of myself and stuff like that? And, you know, I ended up taking care of myself, but sometimes I feel like I focused on that too much in the beginning rather than being happy and like, you know, you see how people just go off and travel and stuff like that. I will say I did not do that a lot when I was in my 20s. Yeah.
But you still got to be realistic, too. I feel like, you know, money is the currency in society. So,
yeah. So, yeah. And when I always, to me, I'll always have a person in any of my classes in Howard who have experienced that. And I'm like, please don't drop out. I know that you want to, and this is the time when most people do, but like, you're going to look back on this moment and like, think about, okay, you're recovering and yes, you're sad, but like, you know, your parents are still looking at you like, okay, she's doing everything that I wanted her to do. And so you're like living for that, if you will.
That's a good perspective to have.
Yeah.
So you finished a degree in 3 years after that, somehow.
Yes.
Like a prodigy.
So what did you do like when you were done?
Honestly, so when I got that fellowship, in my head, that's how I ended up in DC. So it was like, in my head, I was like, okay, how can I hurry up and get in my career field and like, you know, get the PhD and stuff like that. So that's when I moved to DC. And basically, I think right after that, like, you know, I was thinking to myself, okay, just keep moving, just keep moving. So you really don't think about, you know, the stuff that you've been through or whatever at that time. So it really was like, keep moving and just finish. Hurry up and finish. Hurry up and finish.
Yeah. But what made grad school the next thing for you? You know, what other than, you know, just jumping straight into the workforce?
So for me, it truly was what my mother said. Like, she really did fill out applications for me. Like
I'm going to do this thing.
One time, and this was in my DC interview, one time I went in the interview and she said I was an expert swimmer. And the woman asked me, and I was like thinking in my head, mama, why did you do that to me? Because I am not an expert swimmer. I can jump in the pool. But anyway, like, so I think of like all that she wrote and I did not want to be like, okay, you know, not finishing what she set forth in this wonderful application that she wrote for me. So yeah, it was crazy.
Did you become an expert swimmer?
I did not.
I just didn't know.
I finessed that. I was like, well, I can jump off the high dive and and float around. So if that's an expert swimmer, then yes. So
that is so funny.
Yeah.
I really don't know what to say to that. I will say, like, you know, my mom played a similar role in like my life and my brother's life, where all the applications, like, she did all the research for what we should be applying to, where we should apply all this stuff. I was a little more,
that's great,
you know, headstrong about doing the things, but my brother, she really had to drag along and be like, what are we writing, you know? And so I think that's huge, having parental support to do a lot of these things. We don't really talk about that a lot on the podcast, but like, there's so many applications. There's so many scholarships. There's so many programs. There's all these internships and things. And like, everything requires an application, right? Which means you have to write usually a personal statement at minimum. And that can be a lot when you're like a kid and you're like, I don't know anything about what matters to.
Right. It's like, what y'all know about me?
What matters to these folks on the other side of this application portal. So. Yeah, kudos to your mom.
And it's like, you don't know what it is. Yeah. I would also say, I have no idea how my college applications got written. Like, I just remember being woken up in the middle of the night and my mom's like, sign this. Like, what is this?
That sounds like a dream. Like, I literally had to go to summer camp to learn how to write an essay. And then that is what was submitted ultimately to all of the things. So
I have no clue what mine said. Like, if you could imagine, if you could go back and read your college application essay and what it says.
It's really interesting because, like, so when I was applying at George Washington, after, you know, I went through all of those interviews, you know, most of them I didn't get, but I did get the fellowship that ended up, you know, paying for my education. And I went back and I rewrote the personal statement with this area of human computer interaction. And, you know, they were like, oh, okay, this is good. But I had a lady at the Environmental Protection Agency. I was an intern there and she read it for me. And she was like, her name is Lynn Gobiowski. She retired now. But like, I remember during that time, because that was right when my mother died, she kind of saw me and kind of, you know, this white woman took me under her wing or whatever, reread all my stuff. And that's how I got into George Washington.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Liz.
Right.
So George Washington is such an interesting.
The George Washington.
Oh, I'm sorry.
University. Yeah.
GW. Why?
GW.
Why? Why?
Yes. So actually, and this is interesting because I could have went anywhere, but I just wanted to be in D.C. Maybe I had heard about it and just was like, oh, you know, all those black people who are like just really doing a daggone thing. And I was like, okay, that's how I can be. So I knew that I wanted to be here some way. And so I really only applied at George Washington. And then also, I did an internship with the National Security Agency, and, all of the people went there, like they talked so highly of it. And I was like, okay, I see how I can easily make this transition from, you know, internship in the NSA to actually being at George Washington. So, and they have a lot of programs and all their stuff for us at night. So I kind of figured, all right, well, all right, let me just go there. Yeah.
Did you like declare your master's degree along the way, or did you like get your master's degree and then decide, okay, I'm going to stay for my PhD?
Actually, no. So really the only reason I got a master's degree was because of a raise in money. So like I had started working like during the Christmas break and then also in the summer. And so at that time, they had this program where if you're a computer science, you'll get this bonus of $20,000. I was nice. Like, I'm missing out on my bonus. So I just declared it and I got it. So that was really the, it's horrible. That was really the only reason I got the master's in the middle of it.
Brilliant. Because it feels brilliant to me.
Right. I feel like you saw the opportunity. You took advantage of it.
Yeah. So I was like, I didn't even walk across the stage. I was like, okay, keep moving. That's
cool. So did you intern the whole time you were in grad school? Because I know a lot of computer science students do.
Yes. And I was so poor. I didn't realize.
With your 20K bonus.
I thought I was like. But actually, I was like living in Hyattsville. And wow. I don't know if you know me in Hyattsville at this moment. Mm-hmm. Like that was expensive for me. Yeah, and so when I was. For me, it was interesting. Yeah. A lot of the George Washington people, they live like right on campus and they I would money. See them like, you yeah. know, with their, they got money. And mm-hmm. I'm like, so honestly, I was really poor. So I just didn't think like, okay, people are really paying $1,400 per month for like an apartment and stuff like that. So it blew my mind. It really blew my mind.
That's a mortgage. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. So transitioning from master's to PhD, you know, completely yes. different kinds of programs, obviously. Like, how did you go about deciding who you would work with for your PhD?
Yeah, actually. So for me, when I applied at George Washington, I met with the professor, probably the only one that does human-computer interaction, at least at that time. I won't mention his name because that wasn't the best experience. But anyway, yes, I'll say this to business. Say, like, from that experience, like, he said, oh, yeah, you're so excited and you seem so enthusiastic about the area. So, yeah, I'll work with you. I think at that time, like, it was only 2 to 3 Black people. He didn't have any Black students. And so for me, I said, okay, I'm going to work with this person. It's going to be great. But it ended up being a situation where I was on an island. He was having research meetings. He never invited me to them. He never invited me to write a paper with him. I don't even know how I'm a PhD. Somehow I did it. But like, if it was for him, I'm telling you right now, I would not. Yeah.
Hold on. Your research advisor is having research meetings and not involving you. Is it because you had the fellowship and you weren't working on his projects? Like, did you have something that was separate from his interests? Or was it like, no, we all got the same project and he's just not calling me?
Honestly, I didn't find out about this really until I was about to graduate. I thought that's how it was. I did have a fellowship and he didn't have to pay for anything, mm-hmm. but I found out from one of his students, oh yeah, you know, we're researching this and we all go in and we have presentations. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm not invited to.
And none of y'all say
it.
Where's Gloria? Right. It's like, y'all supposed to be lab mates and nobody asks where you were.
Yeah, no. So after that, I end up leaving him and actually found a professor, Dr. Reese Price Jones, who took me all the way through, but that wasn't even his area. Wow. So I'll say this to say, if it wasn't for Dr. Price Jones, I probably would have been just floundering. I didn't know nothing about nothing. Let's say that. Yeah.
I mean, that's something we need to just take a step to the side real quick, because that's too many of our stories where, you know, we always talk about like, you know, getting these prestigious fellowships and getting this money. But oftentimes people don't value what they get for quote unquote free because, you know, they might have funded projects where they feel like, OK, I have these written in milestones. I have to make progress. I'm going to meet with the people who are funded under these things that someone's checking on. But the student I got for free, I'm not going to give them that same mentorship and guidance and time. I don't understand it. I don't do that to my students. I'm like, all of y'all are here to get trained. It doesn't matter where your funding comes from. But, you know, we definitely want people to, they're thinking about PhD programs to, you know, if in, I'm not saying that external fellowships are terrible. They're amazing. They often pay more than the school does, you know, for your internal fellowship. But you have to make sure that, you know, the person you're working with, you're not going to be an afterthought for them.
Definitely. And for me, I will say, looking back at that, like, I don't think I knew how to write papers. I didn't know how to, you know, have the mentorship of a person who would help me through that process because he never provided it. I really didn't get that until like my last year of graduate school, where I actually was writing a poster paper with someone. They involved me in the research. And I was like, wait, people are actually doing this? So, GW was really like the UN. Everybody was with individuals who looked like them. And here I was, you know, this little Black girl who didn't really have anybody to work with. So what we did, all the Black graduate students got together and we would study together and stuff like that. But because everybody's advisor was different, it truly was like, you don't know if you're going against the rules of someone who is in another particular advisor. So really it was a lot on our own of like teaching ourselves of like what to do and how to graduate really and pass the, preliminary examinations and the examinations that they had.
So these are all like other computer science students then? Or were they in other majors?
Yeah, okay. It's computer science. So it's interesting. GW had like three or actually like five Black people. You would get some Black people who would come there because everything is at night. It's in a major city. But slowly those individuals just dwindled over time, like they dropped off. So at the end, I think three of us ended up graduating together. Like they put an article about how we're like 30% of the computer science people who just graduated for Black people.
My gosh.
So we made history because and they were all saying, oh, how diverse is, you know, George Washington computer science? And I was thinking to myself, I had an advisor that didn't even do research meetings with me, but okay. But right. Like, yeah. So
it's hard.
Yeah.
It's super hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, you know, that when you said that, that just reminded me, like, there's so many cases of people who survive in spite of their advisors and not because of. And right, a lot of us, that is our story. But then they get the label, oh, you graduated two Black students, three Black students. You must be this person. It's like, no. We fought with that person the whole time. Let's be clear. Mm-hmm. Let us be clear. And I've heard that happen, like, and I won't name no names, but like a couple situations where, you know, I know and witnessed people having issues and like in their program, and then all of a sudden their advisor gets the diversity award for having graduated those students. And you're like, what did they do? Please tell me.
Yeah. Like, even now, to me, to this day, I have to be mindful of where I'm spending my time. Because when I first started at Howard, I would say a lot of people were using me for my students. Like, they're like, oh, can you only do this for your students and we'll send them here? And I would go off and do this stuff for individuals. So I totally understand, like, and they actually won a lot of diversity awards and everything. And here I am struggling to get one. So, yeah.
Right. On your back with your students.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
So Dr. Gloria finishes at GW.
Yes.
And immediately says, I'm going to work a little bit. I'm going to, like, what was, because, you know, the world was your oyster at that point. Like, you had already done the thing that you had set out to do with the encouragement of your mom. Like, once you reached that point, you know, what were you thinking?
So I was just like, that was one of the happiest moments of my life. I was thinking, oh, God, you know, like, I finally finished. This is great. So I actually went to work for the NSA and I hated it. There's a difference between, you know, like being a student and being and actually having to work there. They were nice to me when I was a student, but when I graduated, it was like, oh, you got a PhD. Ha ha ha. And it was so interesting to me. I've never met so many people who I don't know, are haters just naturally, but
call it what it is.
It was so weird. Yeah. So I think I worked there for a year. And then that's when I went to MITRE. I was thinking, okay, well, I could do research. I'm going to be celebrated. And, you know, MITRE for a while was really great. But I just realized, like, that little Black girl who I was in my senior year when I graduated from Lincoln, I wasn't helping her. I wasn't even creating any other PhD women who looked like me, who went through some of the struggles that I had to go through. And I was like, the story that I could tell of everything that I did go through and still persevered, I need to be able to give back to that. So that's why I decided to come to Clemson, because I knew that I did not have any publications. And I knew that people would say, oh, well, you know, we're not going to consider her for a tenure track. So that's when I went to Clemson.
What were you researching, like, in the companies? Because I assume, like, you were conducting research, right? So
yeah, so it's really interesting. Like, so MITRE does a lot of different things. So at the NSA, I was mainly working on like cybersecurity focused elements, but would build in the HCI component. Mm-hmm. So I was like a mini consultant where I would go around from project to project. And the NSA at that time, they didn't have anybody who was really doing that. It's interesting now because they have a whole individual section that does nothing but that. And so when I went to MITRE, I had said I was going to work on research projects that I cared about. So I wanted to do human emotions. And like, they had this suit at the time that they were trying to do, the Iron Man suit. So I worked on that. Oh, wow. I worked on like social signal processing. Like, I mean, it was fun and interesting and stuff like that, but I just didn't feel like, yeah, I guess I was, you know, working on interesting stuff, but I didn't feel like I was doing anything. I would just go home and say, oh, all right. And, you know, the pay was good, but I just didn't, you know, I was like, huh, something was missing. So, yeah.
You were unfulfilled.
Yes.
Yes. You felt uninspired.
Yes. Wow.
So,
can you tell people what social signal processing is? Because I only learned about it like a few years ago, and I'm like, this is cool and timely.
Yeah. So, with that particular project, it's like looking at body language and body signals to try and either infer emotions, what people are thinking. So I was interested in group dynamics. So, you know, when you go to a conference and people are all huddled up, who are the people that I need to talk to at that moment to get the funding? So like if they're in a circle, and usually it's the tall white man who everyone is looking at in the center. So that's kind of how it fits together, like you're understanding body language to understand who are the leaders, who are the people you should pay attention to and stuff like that. But you can utilize video. They also have like Fitbit now where it can gather information from physiological information. So I was like, OK, let me explore that.
Nice. Nice. So then you decided to do something that meant more to
yes.
you.
Yes.
Postdoc.
Yes.
Yes.
And that is where
I met. Was your postdoc like the most amazing postdoc ever? Because mine was. And
we had a good time.
I feel like, you know, that was the best job I had. So
it truly was. It taught me so much. Like, I hated Anderson, South Carolina. But, you know, it taught me so much.
Yeah, that's where we used to live.
Yeah.
I don't think I would like Anderson, South Carolina, based off of everybody's articulation of what it was like there.
No, you wouldn't.
Sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had bluegrass.
I was real skinny because the food was bad.
It was.
Wow.
It was bad. There was nowhere that you wanted to
eat. We would like cook and make Brussels sprouts and
We would cook all the time. Yeah, I was about to say, Gloria didn't want to put me on the Brussels sprouts. I was like, what? Brussels sprouts? That sounds like detention. And I was like, oh, okay, you hook them up with the olive oil and the garlic and all that. Trying to tell you, my house was the
house. It truly was. Like, that was a fun time. So for me, that's what kept me like, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't want to leave for a little bit, but then I was like, this is South Carolina.
Yeah, it was a good time. We were like, let's be real. We can't stay.
We can't.
Here.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, the other piece of this is your interest and your heart was like really focused on supporting people from your community, right? And you were in community. So you actually had that, ironically, in South Carolina. And that's amazing. Not at an HBCU, which was different from your other educational experiences earlier on. So,
yeah. And I don't know if, Kyla, you remember this, but like that was when the shooting happened. It might have been right when you guys had left, but that was when that teenage guy went into the church and then shot it up. And I was like, what have I done in staying here? And that, for me, it made me really want to focus on Black people. I mean, if we're going to die for it, I might as well help my community in that way.
Wow. That's a powerful statement.
Yeah. Heavy.
Yeah. So I wanted to backtrack really quick. So you made it seem like from industry, you just jumped into a postdoc. Like, you know, how did all that happen? Like, how did you meet your postdoc advisor? How did all that get set up?
Yeah. So actually, I have a friend. His name is Mike King, Dr. Michael King. He worked in the NSA with me. He was my first technical director at the NSA, Black guy, always, you know, doing big things or whatever. He was the program manager of IARPA for his best program at that moment. And so I used to talk to him about how unfulfilled I was. Like, I really didn't feel, you know, in the work that I was doing. Yes, it was fun, you know, whatever, but I didn't feel a connection. And he said, you know, why don't you just do a postdoc? And if you know Mike, like, he just is, he says us to throw stuff out there. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a pay cut and I'm going to see if this is like really what I want to do. And from that conversation, I took the pay cut and I just said, you know what? Who cares? And I did the postdoc. So, and then he introduced me to Damon Woodard through email. And I had also circled back with Juan Gilbert. And I met Juan Gilbert maybe around the time that I felt isolated at George Washington. Like, I didn't have a mentor, so I reached out to him. I was like, well, I've heard so much about you. Can you help me? And he visited D.C. and we went to, like, the one voice of those things that he did, the voter his voter machine. And so I sat in the audience. I was like, oh my God, like, can you help me? And he helped me. He, you know, he was on my dissertation committee. He would meet with me, I would say almost every month, to kind of encourage me. And he would send me emails of like, oh, you need to do this. You need to do this. And I was like, but I don't know if, I don't know what I'm going to do. Should I take a postdoc? That was conversation from him and Mike solidified in my head that I needed to do it because there was no way around it. I was trying to do everything not to do the postdoc just because it was South Carolina. Yeah. So yeah, Juan. Yeah.
All roads lead back to Juan.
Here we are again.
Yes.
Here we are again. I text him every time someone mentions him on the podcast.
the texture.
Yes.
Okay, so you finished up at Clemson, and had you been thinking about Howard for your entrance into she academia?
Wanted to be in Chocolate City.
Like, what was that?
Honestly, I truly did. Like, after the experience in South Carolina, I was like, okay, this is great. However, comma, do I want to live in South Carolina? And I was like, no. So honestly, I reached out through email to the department chair at that time at Howard University, Dr. LeGann Burge. And so I said, hey, I saw that you guys had this opening. Is it still open? And he said, yeah, hurry up. And get your application in. And so I was like, are you sure? Because it looked like it closed. And he was like, no, hurry up. And so I submitted it. And and literally, honestly, like, I think I interviewed. I hurry up and visited. And basically, they had offered me the tenure track position because they lost, actually, Dr. Nikki Washington. Nikki Washington went to South Carolina. Oh, yeah. So we like same office. So they didn't even change the nameplates.
Passed it the same last name.
Yes. It said Dr. Washington. Yes. That's so amazing. She went to South Carolina and I went to DC. And basically they even put me in her same classes. So everybody would call me, oh yeah, you're Dr. Washington.
Wow.
And I'm like, I am. However, I am Dr. Gloria Washington.
Yes.
Not that Washington.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. So,
yeah.
That's funny. I know obviously y'all are at the same place. I was like, that's crazy how little, like, in place the replacement was. Like, okay, swap out, swap in.
We're like, we need a Black woman. No. Yeah.
So how is it working at Howard? Like, do you feel like you've finally achieved the goal that you sought out for, like, all those years and years and years ago?
I really do. Like, I will say that is the one thing that keeps me at Howard, like, my students. So I have a grant now where I was able to hire one of my undergraduate students who went away to UC Irvine. And she got her PhD, and now she's working with me as a research scientist, Dr. Lucretia Williams. Like, so honestly, aww. I don't know. It to me, it's like it's a 360, actually a 180, because a 180. But like for me, in my lab, I had the most Black women, and, you know, we were working on like hair texture, take a picture of your hair and tell you what kind of texture you have. And that actually led to a business for one of my students, Miss Kimberly Hill, even though she works at Google now, but she's still doing that on the side. But like there were so many different elements that I saw. You were supposed to be here. This was the reason why you're here, because you are creating, you know, those little Black girls who were like you, and now they are going away and getting their PhD too.
I remember when you first started, you had a student, and I'm forgetting her name, but she literally had almost a mirror situation with what you had at GW, where she had this advisor that was just doing her all type of dirty. And you were like, no, we're about to get out. We're going to do what we need to do. So like, I know it must be like so fulfilling to like be that person, the person you needed for somebody else. Like literally you stepped in and was like, look, this is not right. We are going to change all this up.
Yes, actually, she was my first PhD graduating, first Black woman PhD at Howard. And so people think when you think of Howard that, oh, there's a...
Really?
Yeah. And I will say this, I need to promote her more. It's like her face should be on everything. But her name is Dr. Ketley Jean-Pierre. She works at Educational Testing Center now. She is a lead data scientist, where she has a whole team of people behind her. But I remember like when she was like,
better go, Kelly.
Right. When she was like, really, should I do this? I don't know. And she did it. And when I think of that, they're like, oh, did you graduate a student? I'm like, yes, the first PhD Black woman. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Right. Man, wait, the first PhD Black woman, period, or in your department? Because this is period. Huge.
College of Engineering.
Wild.
Architecture and computer science. Yep.
That's still ridiculous.
But still, that's a whole college. Yeah. Like, all this time, all these degrees that they've had. That's the first. She's the first. Yeah, we need to bring her on.
Have you
her
really talk should. Like,
because yeah. that's huge. We're collecting all the first, like, Infinity Stones.
Kyla's really, like, encouraging us to get to 100 episodes. So, in the interest of reaching 100, you know, we got to interview some more people.
And also, because they're awesome. Yes.
Anybody who has a first. There's a lot of things you could be first at, too. So
you've been doing lots of stuff to, you know, make more Glorias and to, like, really be that person to stand in the gap for people. Can you tell us a bit about Watch Me Code?
Yeah, so Watch Me Code is, it's a summer program, but it's, like, morphed into this during the semester program for young Black men. So I was raised with brothers, right? So I'm the youngest, only girl. I'm used to, I guess, kind of, you know, encouraging my brothers and stuff like that, and as they went through their trajectory. So what I wanted to do was start a camp that would not only increase the number of young Black men that wanted to do computer science, but that also wanted to start a business. So as part of the program, we not only teach them how to code, we teach them how to apply to the NSF iCorps grant that we have at Howard to create entrepreneurs. So they can work with a mentor. They'll have an idea. They'll pitch it. We give them like $500 seed funding, you know, to go off and think about the idea and then apply for the larger NSF iCorps with the actual mentor. So that's how that program kind of continued. And actually, the person who I work with closely with at HD Woodson, which is in Northeast, is Corey Morris. And so he has been like helping me year after year of finding students. And if you know where HD Woodson is, people consider this the hood. That's where I live at. But we are like, you know, creating ideas that people want to change their community with. So I can give you like an example of one. One particular one was like an application for like a Uber for your shoes. People would say that's nasty. But when you think about it where I live at, right? So you want to buy Jordans, you want to have a lot, but what if you can't afford them? So as long as they're fumigated, you know, they don't stink or whatever, you could rent your Jordans out to your fellow friends and then they return them to you, but you make money from actually renting them out. And so it helps those individuals, so you don't have to go rob somebody for their Nikes or whatever. You can actually be able to, you know, have the latest fashions and actually learn how to code it. So they created an app for that.
That's cool.
That is cool. And celebrities do it too. They rent their clothes and send them right on by.
Yeah, the whole rent the runway.
You know, we are not new
to
this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That is really cool. Like, I'm glad that this is, before we were talking, you know, before the show started recording, we were just talking about how just in DC, like, the crime has gotten ridiculous in, like, the teenage, like, older teenage sort of age range. And I really appreciate the fact that you're doing something to, like, put them to work, to teach them how to do things in their own communities. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know if it's boredom, if it's lack of resources or what, but, you know, they say, I don't mind, it's devil's workshop. So, like, having this camp, like, I would love to see it, like, scale where you can just have students from all different high schools so they can see that there's something else mm-hmm. to do besides carjacking people.
And honestly, I shouldn't say this, but if you look at how much money you would get from a carjacking versus how much you would make from learning how to code, you would see that that is way more lucrative. So like we did a course, you know, the calculator, but we put it in layman terms as well. Like, so you want to be like LeBron. How much does LeBron make? Well, do you know how much does Robert Smith make? And did you know that he is a coder as well? And you could be like that too. So honestly, I'm trying to get more people interested in it and have it scale larger.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So you were also a faculty in residence at Google for a couple of months. So what in the world was that like? What did you work on? What did you do? I've always been curious about, you know, the faculty in residence program that they have. And like, just because, you know, we've been in academia so long. I'm like, what? Google, that's industry. Does my mind even have an industry button? Like, I don't know. What was that like?
So it was interesting. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. So I'll be transparent. During that time, actually, we learned a lot with like the interview experience, the technical interview experience, and how racist and biased it was. And so we were put in the process of like, not only you're going to learn how to teach your HBCU students how to code so they could pass it, but what we revealed in that process was that, unfortunately, it's not even across the board. Like me graduating from George Washington has a different interview from a person who graduates from Carnegie Mellon. And the questions, the experience, and that whole like supportive nature just really isn't there, depending on how you look sometimes and basically where you went to school. So,
wow.
And there's another element to this as well. We were racially profiled. So I always say, like, you don't see a lot of Black people there. And, here we are, a group of Black people walking together, and we were asked for our ID like 10 times a day. One person, it was like, did you find that sitting on the ground? Yeah. The ID. And basically, what? It was crazy. It was so at the end of that, honestly, Lachelle Hatley, she also was in that program with me. And we did a ticker of how many times were you racially profiled for the day. It was like 20. And wow. I was like, it was just a really not a good experience. But I will say this, it helped me think about my research as like, why aren't we looking at this as far as like for D&I for Silicon Valley? And where, you know, tech uses tech, but we don't utilize smart tech to kind of help that process. So, yeah. They had good food, though. That's why I say. I
appreciate you for keeping it 100.
Yeah. Like, the food was great.
I heard the cafeteria is good.
It was, and that was, I shouldn't say this, but. The times
part was.
Yes, that was where we got racially profiled the most, because we would travel around to all of the different cafes and like you see this group of Black people traveling together and they're like, oh, wait, what is this? So, yeah.
It's called community. Right?
Right. Get you some.
Everybody else does it too.
Right.
You just stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hot mess.
Yeah.
So are there any projects that you're working on that are like super exciting?
Yes.
That you want to share before we head out?
Yeah. So actually, we are working on Project Elevate Black Voices. So in a nutshell, your voice assistant technology is racist or biased against your voice. So at Howard University, we are doing a huge data collection effort working with our community to create a consortium of HBCUs that are going to come together, create this data set so that we can improve voice assistant technology. And then one day we may have a Hey Shaniqua which would be like a version of Alexa.
Like, hey,
yeah, like so that you don't have to code switch.
I love it. Hey, Shanique.
And she can understand you. You can be yourself. Right. And she won't be racist or biased and try and lock you up and figure out where you live and stuff like that. So that is the project that I'm working on.
Yeah.
I like it.
I love Thank it. You. So if people are like, hey, I'm in undergrad and I want to work with you, how should they reach out to you to join your lab or learn about your research?
Yeah, so you can, you know, friend me on LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn, Gloria W. It's not a lot of Gloria Washington's, Gloria Washington PhD. You can find me there. I don't really do Twitter anymore because I'm boycotting, but you can also find me there. Dr. Glowwash is the name underneath there. And so if you're also one thing I want to plug is that at Howard, we have a, you know, PhD program and we don't get a lot of love to get like some of those Black people that are, I don't know, you know, what to actually go to a good school because we're a good school, but we're still building up our ranks. So if you want to work on projects that matter to your community, that you see an investment in and that you want to change the world with, definitely come to Howard PhD program.
Mm-hmm. The founding members of Hey Shanique are coming Shanique. Your way.
Yes. Gloria, thank you so much. I'm so glad we finally had a chance to talk with you. I'm like, you've had a story that we've been wanting to get out to people, and we appreciate you taking the time to do this today.
Thank you so much for having me. I remember when you reached out to me, I think it was 3 years ago. Like, I was like, oh my God, I felt so bad. Yeah, it was like the beginning of the pandemic.
No, you're fine. I'm gonna just keep harassing people until they say yes.
Like, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yep. I have a harassment list.
But this was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Gloria.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
This podcast wouldn't be possible without our sponsors. This season is generously supported by NCWIT and CRAWP. The National Center for Women and Information Technology, or NCWIT, is a nonprofit community that convenes, equips, and unites change leader organizations to increase the influential and meaningful participation of girls and women in technology.
And the Computing Research Association's Committee on Widening Participation in Computing, or CRAWP, endeavors to increase the success and participation of underrepresented groups in computing research and education at all levels. As always, you can find us on our website, modernfigurespodcast.com.
Send your questions to askus@modernfigurespodcast.com.
And follow us on Twitter. Kyla is @Dr_Kyla, and I am @JeremyWaysome.
Visit modernfiguresinc.com to learn more about our nonprofit organization aimed at promoting and engaging with women and girls interested in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and of course, computing.
Until next time, stay moisturized, hydrated,
mind your business,
and protect your peace.